Shalom. We're going to see today a continuation of the Agadat of Rav Kook's commentary on Masechet Shabbat, Lamed Gimel Amud Bet, the famous story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai when he leaves the cave. And we're going to see today Rav Kook's directives on how to argue. Arguing is part of life, and especially when you're married, or you have kids, bosses, there's a lot of arguing. You're waiting online, somebody pushes you from behind, somebody cuts. There's a lot of arguing in life, and the question is how to argue. And what Rav Kook does is that he puts, we're going to relate to how to argue in the context of how to mikariv people, how to bring people closer to Torah. And Rav Kook deals with this in a lot of different places. And one of them, to a certain extent, is our paragraph tonight. So let's see it inside. I'll open up the share screen. Let's see how to get to share screen. Here we go. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara on Masechet Shabbat reads as follows. Again, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and his son have left the cave. They both now understand the value of the physical world. They both stopped burning things up. Shama Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair chatnei v'nafak l'ape. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, not only did Rav Shimon Bar Yochai have great sons, he also had great sons-in-law. And Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair comes out to greet Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Aile lebe bani, and he brought him to a bathhouse. Havi ka'arich le lebisre. And remember, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son spent 13 years covered up to their neck in sand, and they would just wear their clothing during prayer, when it was time to daven, and then they would take it off again. So they didn't know how long they would be there for, and that way their clothes didn't wear out. So if you're in sand for 13 years, obviously the skin suffers. Chaze Davi Beit Pili Begufe. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair saw that Rishon Bar Yochai's skin was full of breaks. Havi Ka Bachi. V'kanatru damat enei v'kametzav chalei. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair was spreading some kind of oil or medicine on his father-in-law's wounds, and his father-in-law was crying from pain, and the tears that went onto the wounds made it even more painful. Amar le oili shirei ticha bekach. The son-in-law said, "Oi, it's terrible that I see you suffering this way." Amar le, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai answers him, "Ashrecha shereitani bekach. You should be happy that you see me this way. She'omale l'reitani bekach, lo matzata bekach. If you would not see me this way, you would not have found that Torah that you enjoy from me in me." And the second part of the Agadata we'll explain next time, or Rav Kook will explain next time. But Rav Kook is going to focus today on the idea of that time period that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when he left the cave, he went to the to various springs or wherever it was to work on his health. To Udat Yeshivato Beme'ara, the mission of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is sitting and learning in the cave for 13 years. Hayta litalot ma'od al kol ha'chayim. The idea was to rise above the physical life. And we discussed in previous shiurim that there's nothing wrong with separating yourself from life and going to yeshiva. Today there are midrashot for women. To spend a year, 2, 5, 10 years in yeshiva. Even though nobody is claiming that yeshiva life is life, nobody is claiming that you should spend your whole life in yeshiva, and at the end, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai also leaves his spiritual habitat and goes back to the world. So the goal is life. And the yeshiva is a means, not the end. So continues Rav Kook, Al chumriyut v'chola taloi bahem, the idea of coming to the yeshiva, separating himself there in the cave, to rise spiritually, right? We all know anybody who's learned in yeshiva, that when you don't have to worry about food, you don't have to worry about your laundry, they cook for you three meals, Shabbatot, and everything's taken care of, especially when you're single. You don't have to pay for an apartment. It's really like Gan Eden. The Chazal explained that the 40 years in the desert was like learning in the ideal yeshiva, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us man, gave us the birds, the slav, gave us Amud Esh, Amud Anan. We didn't have to serve in the army. But real life begins when we enter Eretz Yisrael. It is a yirida letzorech aliyah that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai temporarily left the physical world in order that he should have a positive influence when he leaves the cave. Vilorot darkei chayim elyonim lebaei olam hashkuim bechayei hargasha shelehem yoter miamida haruya. In general, and we spoke about this in previous shiurim, everybody has to know, is he leaning in this direction or that direction in order to get to the middle, like the Rambam says in Hilchot Deot. Now, most people have a tendency in life to lean a little too much in the direction of physical pleasure, of the physical world. And therefore, we have to make a conscious effort, and that's where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, why he spent his time in the yeshiva, in the cave, in order that he should come out to give Am Yisrael that spirituality and teach them what's really more important, what's less important, what's primary, what's secondary. Achshav shehigi hazman ha-pu'ula al ha-chayim ha-chumriyim. And here's the chidush of the day. Rav Kook is telling us that now that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is leaving his cave, biyoto, it is time that he has to return and rediscover the real world, the physical world. Biyoto po'el al sviva shel anashim ha'chaim chayei chomriyut. If that guy who, as we saw last time, the man who was plowing, and at first Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was angry, and he burned up the man, and he burned up his plow, and he burned up his field. Okay, now Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai understands that God doesn't make mistakes. Hashem wants us to do Torah and Avodah, to find that, as we learned last time, the kissing point, the overlap between Kodesh and Chol, as we saw the old man who has one foot in the physical world, one foot in the spiritual world. And he's running Bein Hashmashot. He has one foot in the secular week and one foot in Shabbat. And he's running with the Hadassim, which is half physical pleasure, half spiritual pleasure, Reach, Ruach. And so now that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is returning to the physical world, he has to rediscover and get back onto the same wavelength as his students are going to be. The first thing that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has to do is livnot et churban hachomer sheyarad plaim b'chol oto hazman shaya noad li talut haruchaniyut b'midata ha'olyona. That he has to work on that, getting back to the physical world, in order that he can influence. There's a famous story, I think it's Rav Harlap, who saw Rav Kook once in Beit HaRav Kook, walking back and forth, back and forth. He was burning up, and you could see on his face that something was on his mind. And Rav Harlap asked him, Rav Kook, what is on your mind? And Rav Kook says, well, I'm about to enter a Din Torah, and I have a problem because the Din Torah regards a lot of money. And if I paskin like Reuven, Shimon's going to lose a lot of money. And vice versa, Reuven's going to lose a lot of money. And I have a problem that I really don't value money. He said, I don't understand what money is about. There's also a famous story, a documented story, that all the beggars knew that when he would get his salary, he would give it out to the beggars of Yerushalayim, and by the time he came home, he had nothing left for his wife and his family. So then they started paying his salary directly to his wife. Rav Kook really was on such a spiritual level, he knew, but that's what's important for our point, he knew that he had to, when dealing with money in a Beit Din, he had to be on the wavelength that money is important. But he just wasn't there, so he has to, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, is doing here, according to Rav Kook's explanation, you have to get into that wavelength, otherwise you can't influence. I think maybe the greatest story is something I brought here, if you want to see the documented version, in source number 2. In Zichron Yaakov, the old shul built by Baron Rothschild, it still stands today, and I daven there sometimes when I visit my brother and sister-in-law. And originally, they put the bima up front, like was the custom in the Reform temples. One of the first changes that the Reforms did is that they moved the bima from the middle to the front. I've seen, by the way, some Ashkenazic shuls who confuse it, because there are so many shuls that have the bima in the front, they think that it was the Reform. I actually heard this from people. It was the Reform who moved the bima to the middle. And you have to davka daven from the front. And the opposite is true, the famous response of the Chatam Sofer. Anyway, they heard about this shul, that the bima was in the front. It was an Orthodox shul, a mechitza and everything. But there was this problem. And when they were on the Masa Moshavot in Tafresh Ayin Dalet, 1914, Rav Kook and Rav Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld, the head of the Eda Haredit in Yerushalayim, and a bunch of leading rabbis, Rav Charlap and others, went to visit all the different kibbutzim and moshavim. And they came on Erev Shabbat to the shul in Zichron Yaakov, and Rav Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld said, "I'm not entering. I cannot go into a shul which has the bima like the Reform." You know what? Maybe we'll just read the last two lines here inside, because it's very interesting in source 2. And Rav Kook says, "Ani omer sheikanes." Rav Kook, who was much greater than Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld, and Rav Zonenfeld knew it, and everybody knew it, he told Rav Zonenfeld, "No, you must enter." To which Rav Zonenfeld said, "Mitzvah lishmoa divrei chachamim." I wish the students of Rav Zonenfeld from the Eda Haredit would know the respect that Rav Zonenfeld had for Rav Kook. So he said, "Okay, I must listen to Rav Kook, and I will go in together with him." And then Rav Kook, when asked to speak, he spoke about the problem of the Reforms, the problems of making changes in tradition.
They want to share the screen.
Yeah, I'm just, when I'm not on the sources, so I, for this source, I got it. Okay, I apologize. There we have it. And so, again, Rav Kook told Rav Zonenfeld, you should also enter. He says, "Okay, I will." And Rav Kook speaks about the importance of tradition. And in the end, they said, "We will have a meeting Motzei Shabbat of the board of the shul." And in the end, they decided to move the bima back to the middle. And then Rav Kook turned to Rav Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld and said, in such a classic phrase, "Im lo nichnasim, lo hayinu metaknim." If we would not have gone in, we cannot make changes. In other words, you have to go in to be with the people in order to influence them. And Rav Kook himself was very, very torn between his love of Israel and Eretz Yisrael and the Chalutzim, the pioneers, even though they weren't religious. And he also had a love for the Torah and for the religious Jews. There's a beautiful sentence which is found it's hidden in a place, most people don't know this, at the end of Rav Kook's volume of Shut, of Shelot U'Tshuvot Orech Mishpat, Rav Kook writes in this letter, source number 3, "Va'anochi hineni tamid natun ben hashvilim." He says very picturesquely, I am placed in the middle between the two paths. By the way, Beit Rav Kook, it's not a coincidence that he is right in the middle between the old yeshuv of Mea She'arim and the new yeshuv of Rehov Yafo. That's exactly where Rav Kook's house was. And this is what he's saying. I am right in between these two paths. Shineni pone ba'ayin achat. With one eye I turn. Ech liyasher darkei ha-shalom ve'achva ben azkenim yirei Hashem umuflagei ha-Torah. Sheba'avonotenu arabim yitzra desinat chinam matza sham ken. He says, unfortunately, among the Charedim in the old yeshuv, there is, unfortunately, Sinat Chinam has found a predominant place. Ume'ever mizeh, on the other hand, Eich la'ashpia darkei Hashem yitbarach v'avato yitbarach, ve'munat uman b'lev atzirim abaim litnachel al admat ha-kodesh. How can we also, together with our love for the religious, also show our love and try and connect the two and bring the chalutzim, the non-religious, the rebellious, anti-religious chalutzim sometimes, ba'ofen shiyeh ha'inyan k'chevetz Hashem yitbarach, that it should be according to the way of God. L'kayem azara shel ha'emet v'ashalom ehavu. Both are very important. We need also emet, and we need also shalom, as the pasuk in Zechariah is. What is emet? Shabbat is emet. Torah is emet. Religion is emet. So is Eretz Yisrael emet. But so is shalom. And we need, as Rav Kook writes in one of his letters, we need to show love, awls, and patience, and tolerance for both groups. A lot of times today, people remember that we have to have tolerance for the secular Zionists, but forget that we need also tolerance towards the anti-Zionist religious. And Rav Kook writes explicitly in one of his letters that we need tolerance for both. And hopefully the idea is, as he writes, Veshiv levavot al banim, velev banim al avotam, that halavai, the young people, should learn religion and tradition from the elders, and halavai, the elders, should learn Zionism, nationalism, and modernism, taking the good from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's modern world. The elders should learn it from the new generation. If so, what can we summarize in the meantime of how to argue? By the way, Rav Shlomo Aviner has an article on how to argue. And again, this is good for the family. This is good for your boss. This is good for your neighbor. How to argue, whether it be a spiritual argument or whether it be an argument about something technical. So the first point that we saw is that in order to bring people close, Rav Kook says in source number one in the Enaya, you have to stress, why did Rav Shimon Bar Yochai Davka start working on his physical body before he goes to influence on the more physical-oriented people? To show them we're on the same side. And that's something very important, especially regarding teenagers. Adolescents like to argue, and it is so important to remind them, hey, I'm on your side. Everything that I'm sharing with you from experience, from knowledge, is for your benefit. You know, even if you disagree, remember that I'm on your side. That's number one. Number two, you have to be on his wavelength. If the physical world is important to the people you're going to teach or speak with, that's what you have to talk about. Till this day, you know, a lot of people on the news, when they get to the sports, they just turn it off. I also listen to that last minute about sports so that I can discuss it with my children, right? Kids, I have a son who's in the Army. He has all day, 24-6, 6.5, is working on his tanks and is a commander. And one of his ways of relaxing is watching sports. So Saturday night, Motzei Shabbat, I watched a little soccer with him, and to be able to converse with him on his wavelength. And that is an important thing, also with your spouse, right? There are a lot of things that men don't understand about women, and vice versa. like the famous book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And before you argue, you have to get into that mindset of the other person. Just like Rav Kook, make a conscious effort to remember what money is about before you start speaking with somebody about money. Those are the first 2 points. Let's go on in source number 4. We'll see in other sources, Rav Kook adds on to other points on how to argue and convince and makariv, bring people closer to Torah or to your opinion. In source number 4, this is from Igrot Re'iya, Igeret number 50. This is a letter to Rav Milstein, to those who have been participating for the last 10 years. We learned this together. And Rav Milstein, Rav Dov Milstein, was a rabbi in Warsaw, very well-to-do. He came to visit Rav Kook in Yafo, and he complained to Rav Kook about his socialist sons who left religion. 2 out of the 3 left religion. And Rav Kook promises him that if you're tolerant, if you're patient, either your sons will return, or at least their children or grandchildren will return. And I think I mentioned it here once, that the most common question that I've been asked since working in the archives and of Rav Kook is whatever happened to the sons of Rav Milstein, because there's a series of, I think it's 7 letters, where Rav Kook is directing him how to deal with children who leave the derech. And Mamash B'Siyata Dishmaya, I wrote an article. I found a person, one of the great-great-grandchildren, called me up one day and says, "Hi, my name is Yecheskel Milstein, and I'd like to..." And I said, "Wait, are you the great-grandson of Reb Duber Milstein?" And he says, "Yes." And through him, I was able to find the rest of the family. And in fact, even many of the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of those who left did return to Judaism. Anyway, in his letter, in source number 4, of Rav Kook to this Rav Milstein, he writes as follows: Va'asher ba'atzati yishal al dvar hitnaguto im banav. He said, regarding what you asked my opinion of how you should relate to your children who are anti-religious, Polish, socialist, nationalist. They weren't even Zionist. Kvar amarti lechvod torato bi'oto po imanu. Again, Rav Milstein was very wealthy before he lost all his money in World War I, and he was able to come and tour Israel for several months, if I remember correctly. And Rav Kook said, we spoke about this when you were by me. Sheshitati litnaheg davka b'midat ha-chesed ha-gamur im ha-tzairim. Again, Rav Kook was 3 generations ahead of his time. At the time, we're talking 100 years ago, where in most religious Haredi communities, if a son was caught smoking on Shabbat or left the derech, he was excommunicated, he was kicked out of the house. Even in my own family, we had cases like that I heard about of children who were kicked out of the house because they didn't want to be religious. Rav Kook, today, his opinion is accepted by the Haredim as well. But 100 years ago, he was way ahead of his time, and he said we must be chesed agamur with these young people. Total tolerance. Vilomar lehem sheyesh benetiyotem kama dvarim tovim. We have to show them that in their ideology, remember, Rav Milstein's sons were idealistic socialists. Rav Kook is saying we have to show them that their ideology is great. Part of their ideology is not only is it kosher, but he continues, ubemet heim heim hinam gufei Torah. The idea of equality, the philosophy of socialism, that is part of the Torah itself. We learned together, those of us who were here, Jay, I also taught this in Rechavia, and also those who have been in the Shiur in Kochav HaShachar, and those who learned with me in Orot, Ma'amar Hador, where Rav Kook says exactly this to the Chalutzin. He said, you want to live in Israel? That's a mitzvah. your Zionist rebellion to make a Jewish state, that's also a mitzvah. You want to speak Hebrew? Well, that's Lashon HaKodesh. You want to set up a Jewish army? That's Milchemet Mitzvah. You want to work the land? Well, that's Mitzvah Yeshua Eretz Yisrael. And he went and he shows the young pioneers that their rebellion is not against religion. Their fathers, many of the rabbis in Europe, told them that it's either or. Either you're a chalutz and a Zionist, or you're religious, but you can't be both. And Rav Kook is telling them it is not either or. As a matter of fact, he's telling the chalutzim, regarding these ideals, you are more religious than your fathers. Because you want to do the mitzvah of living in Israel and working the land and speaking Hebrew and serving in the army. You should teach these mitzvot which have been neglected to your fathers. And not, you don't have to rebel against religion. Because your rebellion is not against religion. Your rebellion is against galut. And that is a rebellion whose time has come. And that is, in a nutshell, Rav Kook's Ma'amar Ador. And again, he's breaking down the mechitza between Zionism and religion and telling us that religious plus Zionism equals the original Judaism. All the heroes of the Tanakh were religious Zionists. So point number three regarding how to argue is to stress the good in your adversary's opinion. Summarize and say, you are correct on A, B, and C. You can then go and disagree on E, F, G. But first point out that you're, again, like we said before, we're on the same side. We're on the same wavelength. I even admit that you are correct regarding certain things. Point number four that we saw is stressing, especially when talking to non-religious people, you're a humanist, you're a leftist. Do you know that by following the Torah, by learning Mesilat Yesharim, by learning the mitzvot ben Adam l'chavara, you will be more of a humanist. You will be a better leftist. You will be more humane person. And your rebellion is not against nationalism or religion. There's a song of one of the singers, Al tikri li Yehudi, Al tikri li Yisraeli, Krali ben Adam. Don't call me a Jew, don't call me an Israeli, I'm just a human being. And Rav Kook is saying, you know what? It's very good that you like to be a human being. But you know what? The more Jew you will be, and the more Israeli you will be, in other words, the more nationalist you will be, and the more religious you will be, also the more moral you will be. And part of the problem of the Israeli left is a selective humanism. It's even more of a problem in the Democratic Party in America, where they think that humanism is to feel sorry for the Palestinians who are shelling us, and they forget to feel sorry for the Jews who are suffering and who are the victims, right? Selective humanism is not humanism. But first, point out, I agree with your humanism, or I agree with your socialism, and that it does not contradict the Torah. As a matter of fact, there are many sources. Every true ideology is found in the Torah. And that's a concept which, you know what, let's jump for a second to source number 7, where Rav Kook spells it out very beautifully. In source number 7, Rav Kook writes, Yesudato shel hapirud hi betzdadim hashliliim shekol koach roe b'chavero. The whole problem is not that there are three political parties. There is the left wing, which is more humanist. There is the right wing, which is more nationalist. There is the religious parties, which are more religious ben adam lemakom. The problem, there's no problem that you want to stress this and he wants to stress that. Adrab, it's natural that there be different parties. The problem is when people speak against the other two and think that they have a monopoly on the truth. And the problem is, Rav Kook says that we need this triangle, because if you don't have these three ideologies, again, nationalist, religious, and humanist, source 7, third line, בפרט בהתפשטותו היתרה על חשבונם של כוחות אחרים. If you take your ideology to an extreme at the expense of the other two ideologies, you yourself are going to be making mistakes. We once gave the examples based on the Rav Kook at Orot, that if a woman runs into a burning home and she hears two children crying, one is her own baby and the other is a stranger's baby. And in the name of altruism and selflessness, she lets her own baby burn and she saves the other stranger's baby. And obviously, that is not altruism, that is not humanism, that is not selflessness. That is crazy. Because a person who doesn't have a special love for his family and his nation, but he loves the enemies more than he loves his own brothers, that's a sign that he doesn't know what love is about. So the idea is, again, let's skip down to paragraph Bet, 7 Bet. This is in Orot, page I in Bet. אבל הפירוד במקום שצריכים לאחד מביאה לזה שמעט מעט מתרוקן הרוח ההכרה החיובית במאמר הכוח המיוחד. He said, instead of putting down the other ideologies and thinking that you have to put others down to raise yourself up, like the Chavetz Chaim says about Lashon Hara, he says, Mela, if you steal, you gain something. Why do people feel good when they talk Lashon Hara, they cut other people down? That's exactly what we're talking about here. People, instead of building up their own ideology, cut down the other ideologies. And instead of uniting and respective tolerance and learning from each other, again, we spoke about this when we learned this Piska, what is the idea of a triangle? In a triangle, A kisses B, and also kisses C. But also A is limited by B and is limited by C so that it doesn't get to an extreme. We need nationalism to make sure that humanism doesn't get to an extreme and that religion doesn't get to an extreme. And also we need religion to keep humanism in check. We need a Shulchan Aruch to tell us when to be good to this at the expense of that. When to be good to your nation at the expense of mankind, when to be good to your family at the expense of your nation, and vice versa. And also, we need humanism, because that is, again, one of the three godly ideals. So getting back to other points regarding how to argue and convince, let us continue to source number 5. To summarize what we saw now, is that there are many truths. Don't think that you have all the truth in your pocket. As a matter of fact, I brought for in source 8, Rav Kook writes in one of his letters, Resh Ayin Vav, Al yeh ha-nitzachon shel miflaga achat gadol yoter midai. It's not good that one political party should have too much power, should win by too large a margin. Ki le'olam b'shivui ha-mishkal ha-bracha mitzuya. That the blessing is always found by having that balance. What's called in music, harmony. Harmony is comprised of 3 different notes which harmonize together. A, C, E, together, make the chord of A minor. So, this is what Einstein called the theory of relativity, and what Rav Kook calls the Achdut HaKolelet, that modern man knows that there are many different truths, as opposed to postmodernism that says that there's no truth. The idea that every person has a truth is true if you combine it together with the other truths, and every shade of the rainbow contributes to light. That's what light is comprised of. Okay, so that is another point. Let us see in source number 5, another aspect. Rav Kook writes in Igeret Tav Resh Nun Dalid. This is to Rav Tikhochinsky. And he writes, Hinenu mikom makom muzharim, on the second line, litnaheg bederech kavod vinimus. This is rule number 5. Rule number 5 is to respect the other person. Don't cut the person other down. Not only should you not call him stupid, but we just said before, you should praise his ideology. Lehilachem al harav v'chet Velo al harayim vechotim. This is lesson number 6. Differentiate between your adversary and his opinion. His opinion may be wrong, but that doesn't mean that you are wrong. That doesn't mean that you are stupid, right? And this is the famous Gemara in Masechet Brachot that Bruria teaches her husband, Rabbi Meir, on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Yitamu chataim min ha'aretz. May all of the sins be done away with. It doesn't say Yitamu chotim, that all the sinners should be done away with. We want the sinners to do tshuva. We love the sinners. And even when you're arguing with somebody, especially within the family, but with anybody, it's a good idea when you're arguing with your boss also, to also have respect and also differentiate between him and his opinion. As not only the boss, it's also the worker who's under you as well. Continues Rav Kook, שאולי אינם במציאות אחרי הצירוף הגדול של גלותנו ארוכה, אולי הם שוגגים אנוסים או מוטעים. This is another very important point. Give the other guy the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he wasn't educated properly. Maybe he doesn't see things. Maybe he never learned a certain ideology. And just like in halacha, you don't deal with a mezid like a shogeg or anus. Somebody who sins brazenly is not as bad as somebody who just sins accidentally, and who is different from somebody who's anus, who doesn't even realize that he's sinning. And continues Rav Kook, ובכלל הידי עבודת חיוב, and as we said before, as we stressed before, that is the point of being positive, seeing the positive. Let's go down to source number 6, Rav Kook in Igrot Aleph, Siman Kuf Yud Gimel. On the third line, we're running out of time, Rav Kook says as follows, Ki yaduahu, of the third line of source 6, Ki yaduahu, shekol de'a chadasha noledet, im chesronoteha vesigeha. Al ken em tzrichim lefakeach ayin litzaref sigeha. Very important point. People are not stupid. Every ideology and every opinion and every adversary that you are arguing with has at least a certain amount of logic. And what we have to do, and this is the new point, we have to help our adversary clarify the good, take the good, and leave the bad. Yeah, it's very nice that you learn Torah, but don't talk against those who serve in the army. Or it's very nice that you're serving in the army, but don't talk against those who are learning Torah. Again, like we said before, be positive and don't speak against. And also help the person. There is good in every ideology. There's good in Naturei Karta. We can learn from them Tzniut, how to dress modestly. We can learn equality from the socialists. We can learn love of Eretz Yisrael from the Zionists. And we should learn from each and every ideology the truth of their ideology. Again, every ideology has at least a part of truth. I also want to learn. I heard this personally from Rav Yochanan Fried. I saw this in books, but I heard it personally from the person who was involved. When students from Merkaz Harav went to non-religious kibbutzim to have dialogues with the kibbutzniks, and they came back and they told Rav Tzvi Yehuda, Rav Kook's son, they told him, you know, very proudly, we're going in your footsteps and the footsteps of Rav Kook. We went to the non-religious kibbutzim to teach them Torah. Rav Tzvi Yehuda asked him, first question, he said, what did you learn from them? And Rav Yochanan Fried said, excuse me? He was young, he was in his early 20s. He said, what did you learn from them? They also have an ideology. You can and should learn from them. To summarize, we mentioned 9 different points. We mentioned the point of, and this is again, how Rav Kook explains that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had to deal with his physical health and put on oil, etc., when he left the cave, in order, before he goes out to the world, in order to influence other people. How? First of all, and this is the same thing regarding every argument, we're on the same side. Number two, you have to understand their wavelength. Number three, stress the good and the correct in what they are saying. Number four, point out, especially if it's a non-religious person, what you're saying is actually part of the Torah. Thank you for teaching me. You're not anti-religious. Point number five, respect. Number six, separate, differentiate between the person and his opinions. Number seven, give him the benefit of the doubt. It's not his fault if he didn't learn that which he should know, or you want to teach him. Number eight, one of the most important points, always stress the positive, not the negative. And number nine, remember the theory of relativity, that there are many truths simultaneously. And just like Einstein taught us, and we know this from the museum, you go to the museum and it shows you how much would I weigh if I were on Mars, how much I would weigh if I were in water, how much would I weigh if I were on the moon. Well, most people care how much they weigh when they're on Earth. But the truth is, I weigh different things at the same time, and all of them are correct.